Hello, I'm Brian.
I'm Caroline.
I'm Claire.
And this is the Computer Weekly
Downtime Upload
Podcast.
We're back. We're back in 2020. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, listener. Happy New Decade, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So in today's podcast, we're going to talk about, well, everyone is talking about the Sussexes.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite hard to say.
Yeah.
So why not us? So Caroline, we're going to talk about...
The Travelex ransomware attack. Yeah, so that is causing a bit of disruption for travellers.
And then after Travelex, I'm going to say a few words about the role that Dom Cummings, Prime Minister's chief advisor, has in mind for data science. So cool. It's power at last for my guys, data scientists. I'm going to touch on the cybersecurity implications of the whole US-Iran hostilities thing.
Rather you than me.
Very, very briefly, and while thanking all the gods that we're still here, Claire, you're going to talk about retail.
Retail devastation.
Winners and losers. Or is it just losers?
Mostly just losers. But there are some winners out there. You've done more research
into the cheer us up.
Yeah, you've done more research into the winners than I have. I'm all doom and gloom.
Yay! I'm up for that.
Well, one company that is a bit of a loser at the moment is Travelex.
Mm. Yes. This story seems to be continuing a thing that seems to happen every year once we get back from the Christmas break.
Mm.
It doesn't feel like we're probably back to work until there is the first big cybersecurity story of the year. So I think a couple of years ago, the big one was the Meltdown Spectre chip exploit thing, which just meant every company everywhere had to patch all their systems and everything. And now the same seems to be happening with this Travelex stuff, which is being extensively covered at the moment predominantly by our colleague Bill Goodwin, our investigations editor, who rushed out his first story on it on the 3rd of January.
Even though he was on holiday,
he was telling me he was basically heard about it on New Year's Day and was kind of weighing up whether or not he should, you know, rather than, you know, reveling his hangover as most people have on New Year's Day, should he sit down at the computer and write it up and chase up all his sources and stuff like that. But thankfully, for once, he decided not to, and he waited a day or two. And then, yeah, he got his first story out on January the 3rd, which was about Travelex and the fact its systems have come under attack from a computer virus.
Right.
That we now know is a ransomware attack that has resulted in pretty much all of their systems, by the sound of things, being kind of locked away from their staff not being able to access.
Do you want to have a go at naming the ransomware?
No, because I travel. I struggle with pronunciations at the best of times. And
Sodinokibi, something like that.
Let me see it.
I haven't written it down because I knew I wasn't going to say it.
Is it written anywhere?
Yes, it is.
Sodinokibi. Yep. Cool.
So they got hit with that. And not that, I'm going to say.
Bad time.
I think also known as Revo.
Yeah.
Which is easier to say.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's left Travelex pretty much struggling to trade. They can only do cash-based transactions at the moment. Nobody can make credit or debit card transactions, like purchases of foreign currency from any of their bureaus and stuff like that. And it's, at the moment, they've said they've had people working on resolving this since New Year's Day.
Right.
But they're like, it could take weeks to sort it out.
So it's just locked down part of the system?
Apparently it's locked down everything. Like, for a period of time, their websites were offline, that their staff can't access any systems at all. There's people who are on holiday at the moment, and they placed orders for currency to be there at, like, one of the bureaus for them to pick up.
Yeah.
And they're just being told, like, we don't know if we received the order. We can't, you know, we might have taken your money, but we can't see anything on our systems. There's lots of people in limbo who have
parts. So they're on holiday and they don't have any money.
Yeah, there was a lady quoted in one of Bill's stories saying she was down to, I think, her final €3, and she went to go and top up her Travelex card, and it couldn't be topped up. And she's like, got no cash on her at all for
her. She's going to have to be creative.
Yeah, find another way. Like you say, if you're in Vegas, you just place a bet and hope for the best. put those €3 to good use. But it's not an option for everybody, unfortunately.
But so what's the point of the attack? Are they trying to get information, or are they just trying to shut the company down?
Well, with it being ransomware, there has been a ransom demand put in for I think
to unlock it.
Yeah, so they've said if you give us according to one of Bill's stories, if TravelX agreed to part with $6 million, that they will be given the data de-encryption tools they need to get their data back. And they've sort of said they haven't commented, I don't think, yet on whether or not they will pay it. Which people don't do, because otherwise it kind of encourages people.
Yeah, they're like, oh, well, it worked, so we'll
do it to more people. But it seems like they're turning the screws a little bit on kind of making them sort of consider it by saying, oh, we've got plans to sell some of this data on the dark web, like credit card numbers, stuff like that, that belongs to customers if you don't pay. But then there's still a little bit
I wonder if they're bluffing. Yeah, but they don't have all that.
Well, that's what TravelX said. They at the moment, I think they've said that they're not 100% sure that they have the means to access the data. They can lock it down, but they might not actually have the data themselves.
It must be encrypted.
Yeah. So
it's extortion.
Yeah, pretty much. But this has been all over the course of the week. It's a developing story. So there's still probably loads more to come out of it. But yeah, it does sound like a very sophisticated ransomware. So basically, just from Bill's story, it's a type of ransomware that the perpetrators of all this, they rent it and then they can customize it to target the specific company they're going after.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess like this cyber crime as a service type thing you hear of quite often as well.
Our business model.
Yeah. I mean, if it makes the money.
If it makes the money.
I wonder if the criminals ever feel bad.
No.
Yeah.
What would they feel bad about? TravelX or TravelX's customers?
The customers and the employees. I mean, like, ruining lives, right?
Hoping on
them. Maybe they do and they just get on with it. Just part of the job.
Yeah, everyone has parts of their jobs that you just have to suck up and get on with, because there's bits of it you enjoy elsewhere.
There's plenty of things about our jobs that we don't like.
Well, speak for yourself, Brian. But, there might be aspects of it. You know, I don't like the fact I have to exploit people, but I do like the money. So, you know, with checks and balances, and you just got to focus on the bit that you get the most reward and enrichment from as a person, and then crack on and forget about the other stuff.
And Bill's done most of the coverage on this. And he was on the BBC, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's been doing a full-on media tour of the story. So I'm hoping at some point they'll come in here and explain it properly to our listeners, come on the podcast and tell us about it. But yeah, Newsnight, he was on local BBC local TV talking about it as well. I don't know, on the one hand, you kind of, it's just travel, like, they're just the people with booths at airports. But then you think how many people are going through airports, how many people rely on foreign currency. And then on the other side of it as well, there's lots of banks who rely on TravelX to offer their foreign currency services.
I didn't
know
about that.
There's quite a few people.
Tesco Bank
and
a few others.
Yeah, so it's got wide-reaching consequences, and it's still, like I say, still ongoing at the moment. So I know as we came in here, Bill put on our Skype group, didn't he, that he's got another breaking story on it all. So probably by the time this comes out, it will be out of date, what I've said anyway. So we'll see. But yeah, it's been quite an exciting few days.
Mm-hmm.
And Alex Scrotson, our security editor, has also written an analysis.
Yeah.
How to not be the next TravelX, and what you should do, and you should have a plan.
Yeah.
And raising the whole question of whether you should pay or not.
Yeah.
Which I suppose is an open question.
Yeah. But then, there was an aspect of it as well, but there was apparently some security analysts did some analysis of TravelX's systems last year. So there was this thing that they'd left, like, one of their systems quite badly unpatched for quite a while.
Yeah.
So
that's
kind of raised questions about how secure is the infrastructure generally.
Like, how did it happen?
Yeah, and is this related to that, or is this kind of other bits to the way their IT set up that's left them exposed to something like this happening to them?
And I think that was an aspect of one of Bill's stories that got factored into a New York Times piece.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Good dissemination for the Computer Weekly brand going on.
Yeah.
So it's not all bad news. But by the time of my next press trip in March, Caroline, what do you think?
What, will it be sorted?
Yeah. We'll have to go to Marks and Spencer.
Well, they said it would take weeks, but they anticipate it would take weeks to unlock their systems. But does Marks and Spencer rely on TravelX?
This I don't know.
So you might just have to find another way of funding your own activities while you're out on your press trip.
Mug someone.
Yeah, or use credit and debit cards.
Yeah, like Claire does. You don't take cash, do you? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's not necessarily the safest way to travel.
But it might be your only option. Then, will the cyber criminals realise this and then start going after more people with
credit?
Don't
give them ideas.
Well, I'm just trying to think now. Like, they, you know, because that's one of the reasons they think that this has occurred now, is because the people responsible for the attack are sort of banking on the fact that over the Christmas period, TravelX would be running on a skeleton staff, so that their preparedness for
them
to see off something.
They're not very sporting, are they?
Who?
Yeah, these criminals.
Yeah, yeah. So they kind of work on that basis, just thinking, oh, okay, well, maybe the guy who usually just ticks the box, like, yeah, this system secures, had a few days off, so he won't know if we're sneaking. So I think that's part of it, how it came to be.
But like you say, Caroline, it's almost got a seasonal aspect to it, maybe for that reason.
Yeah. Also, I just think, you know, cyber criminals, probably like all of us, the break between Christmas Day and New Year, you haven't got a lot going on, so devil makes work for idle thumbs, as they say. So,
do they say that?
Yeah.
They do say that.
Mm. So maybe they just think, hey, got nothing doing. Go off and cause
that
some
does
money.
Mean that they have to give up part of their Christmas holiday.
But like I said, I don't think their motivations for working are quite like other people's, so I don't think they might.
Like me and Brian, you know, we used up too much of our holiday at other times of the year and you end up having to work over Christmas.
Yeah. But also you don't know what the flexibility is for their working. They might, you know, they might not get Christmas off, but they might, you know, can choose their hours throughout the year, so.
Oh my God, Claire, I've just realised. We were working on New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
But the news of this only really filtered through
the first, second, third.
So we dodged a bullet there.
Yeah.
That could have been us.
Yeah. I wouldn't have.
Working on that story.
I wouldn't have been happy.
You could have been on Newsnight. You could have been in Bill Goodwin's
shoes.
Or whatever else.
Also, Friday the 3rd of January, when there wasn't much else going on domestically, the media was much taken up with a very eccentric job advert posted by Dom Cummings, the famous Weirdos and Misfits blog post.
And who is Dominic Cummings, just in case people don't know?
He is the consigliere in chief to Boris Johnson, our Prime Minister. He posted this very, I thought it was quite a long blog post, about 8,000 words.
Gosh.
But apparently by his standards, that's quite concise.
Oh my God.
And he's put out an appeal for weirdos and misfits to join him in completely reshaping Whitehall, making it more efficient, fundamentally making it more data-driven, analytics-driven. So by weirdos and misfits, he means my guys, the data scientists, which is a little bit...
rude.
Yeah, and software developers as well, they're also weirdos and misfits, apparently, according to Dom Cummings, who is, I guess he categorised himself as being a bit like that too. But, this blog post, which I wrote up at the time, and which our editor-in-chief, Brian Glick, has also come back to talk about. Essentially, Brian's saying it's same old, the rhetoric about modernising the civil service and using government IT as an agent of that modernisation is something that you also... It's actually a really, really nicely structured blog post that Brian's got. Is the same sort of thing that was being said by Blair's government and then by... Mathilene Fox, who was commissioned in round about 2010.
I would imagine as well that they have a specific picture of who these weirdos and misfits are in their mind, which is probably, you know, like the stereotypical, you know, data scientists, software engineers who are all white males in hoodies.
Yeah.
Like, that's who they have in their mind when they're like, oh, the people, weirdos and misfits,
roll up.
Yeah,
yes,
pretty much in
so.
Dominic Cummings' image. So, yeah.
I think he's also thinking Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, so not necessarily just
but
young
still
males.
Stereotypes of, like,
I think
like you say, hoodies and, like, oh my God, we don't wear suits. Oh, is it cool?
Yeah, jeans every day.
Yeah.
Yeah, all that sort of thing, definitely. And he's very, it's very, the blog post is, because you know how we always say it's not about technology, it's about processes and people. He very much puts technology at the front of this because he wants people who, and he mentions R and Python and also Neo4j, which I thought was a bit odd, personally. Because although Neo4j, which is a graph database, and I know the CEO of Neo4j, a guy called Emil Ephraim, very nice man, But I'm sure even he would not say that Neo4j is the only graph database mm. available. So I do wonder how much Dominic Cummings really knows about.
It's probably the only one he's heard of.
Googled it.
Yeah.
Talking about. I don't know, but maybe he has a point. Because one of his points is that there isn't enough cognitive diversity
mm-hmm.
in Whitehall.
True.
That's one of the things that he says.
You quite often just get blockers, though. Like, even if you get all of these people in, they tell you how to do it properly, there'll be so much bureaucracy standing in the way of them actually being able to implement it or be pointless by then.
But also, he said, like, there was a bit in it that just got, like, was quite jarring around the, you know, and if you don't like the way things done, we'll bin you. Like, we'll bin you. He just gets about you, you'll get binned off if you don't do this, binned off if you don't do that. And you're just like, oh, okay, that sounds like a very nice and empathetic place to work, isn't it? Like, yeah.
And he's also appealing for one person in particular, a junior person, to be his kind of sorcerer's apprentice.
No thanks.
He says, don't forget about having a boyfriend or girlfriend. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You're going to be working for me 24/7 and you'll see amazing things.
Sounds great.
And you can apply to him directly.
No, you're fine. When I read it, I just thought, I don't ever want to work for that individual or for that organisation was my enduring thing. Like I said, it's just reads like he's trying to...
an obscure ramble.
Yeah, just try and impress people. Like, look, I don't give two hoots about this. Like, if you don't like it, you ship out. You know, no one's asking you to work here. Like, good, I won't.
And he puts a big emphasis on getting him recruiting people with STEM degrees as opposed to... Because traditionally the civil servant has recruited people with history degrees, politics degrees, English degrees, and just selects them for being really bright. And then trains them to be generalist civil servants. So it does sound, I don't know, from our point of view and our reader's point of view, isn't that a good thing to kind of advance STEM as opposed to humanities people?
But as you were saying before, it's not technology first, it's people and processes. And if you don't understand both, then you're not going to get anywhere. Just having a STEM degree so you understand the technology isn't going to be able to form things so that they're more efficient.
It does seem a bit bonkers, it has to be said. He talks about $1 trillion lying on the street.
Pick it up!
You idiot! Is he okay? Has anyone checked on him?
He never looks okay to me.
Someone said he always looks like the guy who, if you're in Motherspoon and you accidentally knock into and like spill his pint, like he's going to have a fight with you. That's the look on his face, like, you've just spilled my pint. I will have you.
Oh God, he looked like that. Did you see the Laura Koonsberg documentary?
No.
The second one about Brexit, he appears in that and he looks just like that. Because he comes across the BBC film crew in Downing Street and he isn't happy.
These people run our country.
Yeah.
Well, he in particular does seem to have a fair amount of power.
She's terrifying.
But there you go. I mean, Brian's fairly optimistic in the sense that, we've heard all this before and, yeah, we'll see what happens.
It's going to be inconsequential, just like everything else.
Yes, indeed. But it's quite reminiscent of some of the stuff that he's saying of the GDS.
I was going to say, I know there was quite a lot of people on Twitter who work for GDS or have previously just saying, this is not, it's not anything we've not heard before. It's something we've been trying to do for a long time. But then because of his position and where he is and him saying it, everyone's like, oh my God, this is so revolutionary.
It's just like a rebranding of the same rhetoric.
Yeah, same ideas, same everything, really.
And I do wonder, and this is just a kind of personal aside from me, but, you know, it's worked really well for a long time, the way the civil services, the way it recruits and its culture has, you know, it's not been wildly unsuccessful, has it?
I've never worked there. I don't know.
Yeah.
I couldn't comment on that, I don't know.
Yeah, it's probably just like one of those excruciating... like places you work and you get a new manager comes in like, right, we do everything different, you're fired. It's just a bit of that, I think, a bit of grandstanding, a bit of like, right, I'm here now, I'm like, who cares,
can fix everything, and then a year later it's like, oh, we couldn't do any of those things because of you know,
I'm not even convinced. Like, everyone goes on about what a great mind Dominic Cummings is and everything.
Well,
and I think that's just his own personal PR putting it out there. Like, oh, you don't know the plans I'm hatching. You don't... Oh, I'm pulling all the strings behind the scenes. Yeah. And it's like, okay. And like, but he... So there's this image that he is like the puppet master behind it all. And he's like, he's really strategic and a great mind.
Just like Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah. And it's like, well...
Who played him in the docudrama?
I was like, yeah. What? Benedict Cumberbatch is a nice person.
Yeah, so it's not. I'm not sure how much of this is him sort of putting out to sources. Like, oh, guess what? This Dominic Cummings guy is coming into number 10. He's shaking things up. But it's all from him, and so that's getting this sort of images sort of seeping out, and people are like, oh my god, he must be a great mind. And...
Yeah, but 8,000 words doesn't seem strategic to me. That's not, you know, like keeping stuff to yourself.
That's
yeah.
a really good point, Claire.
It's not very dynamic, is it?
No, it's rambly and
it's very rambly.
So that skips to the end.
And it also implies that people are scared to edit.
Yeah, I was going to say that, actually. So it was 8,000 words. How many words did your story come into, Brian, in terms of being able to boil it down to the...
Well, is a really concise synopsis, obviously. So that's
is that in there on
that
one page?
Yeah.
It is, well, and he's looking for a one-page letter.
Oh, well, practice what you preach, then, in that case.
You just make the font really, really small.
Yeah.
Donald Trump executed Qasem Soleimani in Iraq, the number two guy in Iran. I mean, I'm reasonably au fait with geopolitics, but I'm not sure I was that aware of Qasem Soleimani. Were either of you?
No, not really.
But it does, well, I mean, it's got us into a bit of a geopolitical mess. Seems like every single day seems to be a new thing. And the shooting down of that airline.
Over the weekend.
So there was the usual flurry of emails from cybersecurity firms saying that the next stage will be Iran will counter with a cyber attack of some kind, which I wouldn't rule out personally, because clearly Iran will want to do something to damage the US economy in some way.
Yeah.
And that's a relatively low risk way of doing that. Because militarily there's no contest between the US and Iran. It's completely asymmetric. Anyway, Alex Croxton rounded up some of that commentary about the possibility of some kind of cyber war going on in the wake of this, and it's still very early days. So we shall see. Time will tell. So, all very depressing stuff.
Happy New Year.
I'm going to turn to Claire to cheer us up with some retail news.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I need to book in an appointment with my therapist after this session. Like, seriously. Oh, it's not going to get any brighter in the next 5 minutes. I haven't read about the bright spots. I told you that.
No one wants to read about
the
bright spots anyway.
I'm just here to doom and gloom it out, yeah? So basically, as we came into 2020, figures from the British Retail Consortium basically confirmed that 2019 was the worst year for retail in the last 25 years, and that total retail sales fell by 0.1%, with a really poor Christmas period. Lots and lots of retailers have given, you know, like pretty bleak stories. I think Superdry said that their profits could suffer after the bad Christmas period, after the bad Christmas sales. John Lewis said that it might not be able to give its staff bonuses. Tesco sales fell over a few months and suffered a really bad Christmas. Then in 2019, we know that like Mothercare went into administration, and Debenhams and HMV both closed quite a lot of stores. So it's just not looking good. And obviously, people are panicking, you know, calling upon this old death of the high street trope. Like, nobody wants to do physical shopping anymore. And there are...
Should come to Oxford. The Westgate shopping centre is absolutely jam-packed.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, they've just opened a outlet.
And a lot of that is experiential. They have stuff going on in the shopping centre.
Well, that's exactly the point, is that a lot of people have said that if retail is going to recover, physical retail is going to recover, it has to be more focused on experiential retail and, like, reassess what the KPIs are. Because stores nowadays aren't necessarily, like, you can't necessarily validly measure a store based on its sales. It's about, you know, like visits, and if that then translates into online sales, which is like really difficult to determine.
Yeah.
There are a couple of stories over the last year. They sort of show this shifting customer behavior towards buying experiences rather than things.
Mm-hmm.
And also shopping for convenience, which quite often means a drop in retail real estate,
mm-hmm.
and a move towards online shopping as well, because customers want things to be quick and easy. They don't always want to have to visit a store. So there are a couple of stories that appeared over 2019 that sort of factor into this and are like quite relevant in terms of, you know, like how the retail environment is looking. One of them was from Capgemini, which stated that more than half of customers will shop for food online by 2020. Then there was also a prediction from Global Data that click and collect as a service will grow by 45% over the next 5 years. Then there was also figures in the first quarter of 2019 from the British Retail Consortium talking about retail employment and concerns about retail employment, because that they say that a shift towards sort of like online shopping and digital retail has led to a decrease in investment in retail employment. So in that first quarter of 2019, employment in the retail sector fell by 2.4% in compared to the same period in 2018. It's all bleak.
Is that bleak? Because, well, yeah, obviously it's bleak. I've heard of those figures. That's really bleak. But on the other side of things, is it a sign that perhaps people are getting more kind of savvy, you know, mm-hmm. in terms of where they're shopping, what they're buying, you know, trying to save money and stuff like that? Is it a good story from an individual's point of view that maybe people aren't sort of spending so much money around Christmas time, not maybe getting into debt as a result of mm-hmm. all that as well? So there is positives from that aspect. Obviously not great news for people employed by retailers and things like all the retailers themselves.
It just is a symbol of a really big shift. I mean, like, you can look at all of these figures and think that no one's ever going to go to a shop again.
Yeah.
But that's obviously not the reality. Like you said, people are a little bit more savvy about their shopping.
Mm.
A lot of people are moving online. But then there are a lot of retailers who are doing really well because they've got this balance between the online and the offline and the use of technology. So, like, last year, Game shut quite a lot of stores. But they also opened like these really cool experiential stores that's based on the store knowing who you are. You go in to like try out games and to play them and not necessarily just to buy all the time, you know? So it sort of makes you feel like you're a valued customer. You get the customer experience, you feel like the brand knows who you are, you get that personalization, and then you're more likely to buy from them over time rather than in that moment, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does, because that is another industry, gaming, where it's so easy now to just buy a game on a download rather than actually go into a game shop and pick up the cartridge and go, oh, I'm going to have this, please.
I'd like to buy this.
Yeah.
And a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, I think I'm doing an analysis on all of these figures, and the positive will be in that analysis. Yeah. I haven't had... I've only gotten the first bit where I set the scene so far, so that's the scene. But I'm sure that there'll be a lot of positive to come out of it, and like you said earlier, only time will tell.
Mm. But then the other thing, there was quite an interesting story about IKEA,
saying
that there is so much demand for like the kind of shopping that they offer people, but they can't find sites anywhere
big enough for the store. Yeah.
So they're taking over shopping centres, ones that have become dilapidated and stuff like that, because you've got the parking and you've got the size of the thing, and you can take over, like, rather than have loads of little shops like in there taken up by retailers, they can take over loads of those and then just leave some shops in there for the people who still want to operate out of them, which I thought was quite an interesting sort of trend. But again, it makes it a destination, and you give people a reason to go there.
Yeah, like I read a comedy tweet over the weekend that said, oh, if someone doesn't think that a trip to IKEA is a day out, then they've not grown up, right?
yeah,
and that's exactly it, you know, like, it's experiential. They've got all of the different rooms that are set up, how you can decorate them so that you can see how it would look in your home. And you can measure the stuff. You can take it home. You can get your meatballs.
Yeah, most important part, really.
Yeah, exactly.
So
yeah, it's that shift, isn't it? You know, people are going to find ways around it, and the winners are going to be the ones that adapt to this changing customer behaviour and manage to tie all of the platforms together. You know, online, offline, mobile, apps.
It's been a fairly bleak start to the new year, and perhaps that's one of the reasons why Harry and Meghan are relocating to Canada, yeah, by all accounts.
I would.
Mm-hmm. I said at the beginning of the podcast that at the beginning of the podcast we would talk about the Sussexes and what they may or may not do, and completely failed to do so, demonstrating my habitual allergy to all monarchical talk. What do we make of the big story of what was the weekend for us? We're recording on Monday the 13th, but Meghan and Harry, any views?
Well, there was the whole thing that it was announced on Instagram, which it was a total breaking protocol. All these things are supposed to be signed off in-house. You can't just like put stuff. I was just imagining within the whole royal household, I bet on all their phones, like the screenshot option is going overtime. So, oh my god, like in all their little WhatsApp chats, like within the royal household. Oh my god, have you seen WhatsApp what they've put there now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
What's it called?
I don't know, but they announced it on, was it either the day or the day after, or the day before Kate Middleton's 38th birthday. So there's like lots of people, oh my god, she'd be raging. Like they've totally stolen her thunder and all this sort of stuff.
Although it could be seen as a birthday present.
Yeah, it depends how much they like them, which, yeah, apparently is not much. Allegedly.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
I don't know. Does she seem like the person who cares?
I don't know, but I just think, you know, it's her birthday. She probably had like a nice party planned. I'm like, oh, William, are we going to do it? No, I've got a summit with like everybody else. I've got to find out what's going on. So I bet her group chat was between her, Pippa, and whoever else was there.
Yeah.
Off the hook.
There's also several Netflix series that may benefit from
Wow.
Imagine if Meghan could appear in The Crown as herself.
Well, yeah, but also they could bring back Suits now.
Yep, she's free. Suits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they want to be financially independent.
Yeah. Well, in that case, maybe she could give Harry acting lessons and he could be in The Crown as well. Yeah.
The commercial opportunities must be quite interesting. Mm-hmm. They might do a podcast.
Maybe. Yeah. Oh my god, the Real Housewives of like Royal Winter. I would watch that. I'd watch a reality show.
I would watch a reality show. Like Keeping Up With.
Yeah. Keeping Up With Your Highness and whatnot. Your Highnesses, yeah.
Well, by the time of our next episode, we might get a bit more clarity on what's happening with the Windsors. Anything else we want to talk about that's coming up this week, guys?
Oh, I don't know. I'm still in sort of like getting back into work mode, so I don't even know.
It is shocking to be back.
My life is just... Well, the day before the Christmas break, for us due to go on the Christmas break, the Loan Charge IT Contractor review that everyone was waiting for got published.
Mm.
So I spent a lot of my Christmas break fielding responses from that from people even though I wasn't
working. Oh my god,
did you? Yeah, and then and now we're back. I've been writing all those up, but this period from now till April is just going to be mad for anything to do with that and IR35 because it's the whole run up to the IR35 reforms coming in, and then just whatever else happens on the back of this review of the Loan Charge. So that's my life for the foreseeable.
That's just you.
Until April, at least. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see. But apart from that, I don't know what else is going on.
And I'm just taking it easy.
Oh, cool. Good for you. Yes, nice. Kick back.
Well, that's all we've got time for in this episode. Just remains for me, as usual, to say thank you very much indeed to Caroline.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much to Claire.
Anytime.
And thank you for listening, and once again, Happy New Decade.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.